Hello, 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 and welcome to Conversations. We're here at the Cannes Film Festival. It's the 77th edition, and we're going to do our first episode of coverage. We're already on our second day. I'm Eliana, and I'm here with...
Patrick, hi.
Hi, and we have a special guest today, and that is Jakub Jurisch.
Hello, hello. Nice to finally be here. Glad that it worked out.
We're very happy to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, we should perhaps say, who's Jakub? Jakub is a friend of us.
I'm Patrick's partner in crime at moviebreak.de. Like, we cover festivals regularly, and we write about movies, and we're personal friends, more or less.
Right.
Jakub is an encyclopedia, in some sense, of cinema. Yeah.
Guys, I'm already blushing. Let's stop.
If we ever go to trivia, it's better to have Jakub with us in any case. But, Eliana, Cannes, isn't it exciting to be here?
It is exciting to be here. This is my third time here. I believe it's your fourth?
Yes.
And your second, Jakub?
My second, yes.
All right. And, there are always the usual things to see. There's the market, there are the films, and there's just the social aspect of just being around on La Croisette. The other day I saw a dog in a dress. That was a fantastic image.
But there wasn't Messi, right? Because I heard that Messi made it here to the red carpet this year as
Wow. I know, it wasn't Messi. It wasn't Messi. Okay.
I don't remember the last time a dog got so much publicity as this dog.
Messi, you mean from Anatomy of a Fall?
Exactly, yeah. I heard he made his way here this year again.
Oh my goodness. Well, this year it seems like there are... Well, I mean, Cannes is never without... controversy. I don't know if you want to quickly talk a little bit about that.
I think we should, yeah. What is the controversy?
Well, there's this list that is supposed to be published with the name of, I think, approximately 10 personas from the French film industry who are guilty of sexual misconduct in most cases.
Who are claimed to be guilty.
Who
right?
are claimed to be guilty. The list has approximately apparently been leaked online already. We're of course not going to talk about who's on that list, but it remains something that is in the air, that hovers over the festival, and let's see if that list drops. I think it will impact the atmosphere here on that festival immensely, especially if like some of those people are involved in this festival selection.
Right, and Thierry Frémaux, of course, downplayed it as much as he could, but it was also conveyed through media that the team around Iris Knobloch, who's the president of the festival, actually hired a PR team for crisis management. So we'll see how that goes. But there's more even about politics here, right, surrounding the festival, Eliana?
There is one more thing. It seems that there is a Sous les Screens, or Sous les Écrans, La Dèche, which is people who contribute to the festival. They're very unhappy because the festival, the nature of the festival, is very intermittent, and so there are no proper security employment related things, and as of July 1st there'll be a change which will make it very hard and difficult for people to get benefits if they're seeking employment, and so there's some of those people who are also around trying to manifest
And perhaps we should mention what kind of worker, like what kind of people we're talking about. Those are all the people who basically manage the festival.
Yes.
Right, who are construction workers here, who I suppose, who check the badges, let people in, let people out. All these people without a festival, of course, cannot, take place and cannot operate. And rumor has it that there will be, I think it's not only rumors, but was announced that there will be a walkout. Let's see if that really happens, because throughout the last years, I think we've often seen it. People say, oh yeah, there will be there will be protests, but in the end it's all it doesn't really happen. So let's see how it goes this time.
And how about the third controversy, or rather unrelated to the festival, but Mohamed Rousselov, who is with his new film The Seed of the Sacred Fig, is persecuted in his homeland, Iran, and has fled the country. We don't know where he is right now, but it would be a sensation if he appears at this year's festival to promote his newest film. Mohammed Rusolov is rather acclaimed. His last film, I think, There Is No Evil, won the Golden Bear at Berlin 2020.
Yeah.
He's also the longest film in competition with 168 minutes.
I think Iranian cinema often has very long run times. I remember Leila's Brothers a few years ago here as well. That was around 3 hours or so. Yeah, and full disclosure, I'm happy to be on a jury this year. I'm at the Fipresky jury, and I'm only saying that because I talked to someone there earlier who's from Iran, and he said he would not be surprised at all if Rasulov makes it here to the festival, to the press conference.
Yes, I did see that last there was news from Rasulov. It was that he was in a safe place,
right?
Which is probably for his own security, not to reveal anything. Yeah. But it would be very incredible to see if he appears on the Quasette.
Yeah, and apparently his passport was taken away from him almost like 7 years ago or so. So it's crazy that he made it out of the country. Let's see. Let's see how that goes. We hope the best for him and his relatives and friends, that everyone will be safe. Should we quickly, is that important to browse through the jury? I mean, I think it's not so interesting this year, personally. I mean, they went for the biggest household name here, that is Greta Gerwig, who's the president. And this is one of these aspects of the festival where you can clearly see how much France and French cinema and Cannes loves Hollywood. You know, it's one of these instances where you can clearly tell. I mean, after all, that's the director of the most grossing film of last year, of 2023. I don't know, did you find anything noticeable about that jury? I found it very boring, I must say.
Ebru Jelan is also on the jury, along with Lily Gladstone, Ava Green. Might as well mention some of the others who are also there. Koreeda, Omar Sy, Nadine Labaki for Capernaum in 2018. As well as Juan Antonio Bayona. Ebru Jelan is the co-screenwriter of many of Nuri Bilge Ceylan's films, also a photographer and other... I should say something else, but yeah. And it's a curious choice for me, even though maybe I hope it'd be nice to see if there are other... I mean, I actually don't know where I'm going with this.
But you know, but like in her that profession already stands out, you know. The other ones are basically the most boring things.
You know.
Actors and So, yeah. I mean, not to discount visionary filmmaker J.A. Bayona, but whatever. I think that's not worth talking about so much this year. If you hear background noise, by the way, this is because we're on the press terrace, and but maybe it conveys some atmosphere.
And also the Furiosa world premiere is going on right now.
Right. There are actually a few blockbusters here, right, Jakob?
Yeah, Furiosa, a Mad Max saga, the most spin-off type of title you could imagine, which is highly anticipated, though, which I'm also looking forward to very much. Anya Taylor-Joy is going to play a young Emperor Furiosa, and we will find out how Furiosa became Empress Furiosa. And
the Mad Max origin story.
The Mad Max origin story.
Horizon.
Horizon. I was going to say Horizon. Kevin Costner is finally comes the loner from the desert. Finally rides back to town after 21 years. That was his last film, Open Range, which was also a Western, 162 minutes long back then. No, I'm wrong. 139 minutes long back then. This one is now 180 minutes long, which is on par with his theatrical cut of Dances with Wolves. And he also made The Postman, which was also 170 minutes long. So in a way, this guy cannot, for the sake of it, keep his films short. Sometimes he shouldn't when he makes good films. If he makes something like The Postman, maybe he should. But everyone is excited for that film because it seems like a very classical romantic Western. The trailers and everything you've heard so far show no traces of postmodern irony or deconstruction. And I'm pretty down for that, to be honest. Like, I've had enough of cynicism. I want pathos.
Right. And then there's another big title that is, of course, Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis, which is the film he's been selling wine for several decades now. So it's good that this pays off and now is transferred into an actual film that comes to premiere here. Any expectations for that one, the two of you?
Yana, okay.
No, I don't have any expectations for that. I think I need to catch up on my Coppola. Obviously, I do like the Godfather trilogy, but I haven't seen much outside of that. Yourself?
This film feels like it has the vibe of a culmination for Coppola's career, to be honest, because he's been working on this project for almost 50 years in total, and it's always been the furthest he's gotten with it was at the start of the 21st century, but then it was disrupted by 9/11, and he once said that when he thinks of utopia, which is a non-space, that he wants to have a world where children don't get taught in school what they have to learn. It's a world where children go to school and say, I'm interested in this, I want to do this. And it seems like with this film he has accomplished that dream for himself. It feels like he has made, I hope so, the film he wanted to make. And it's a film that I hope makes us dream of a cinema where everything is possible. Or it's a big disaster and it was, in the end, too big and did fail. But even in that case, the worst scenario would be if it was just decent.
Yeah, in any case, it has been picked up by some European distributors recently. And you mentioning all this theoretical underpinning just reminds me that I actually, there was a little reading list was dispersed through the internet where we saw what kind of literature and theory inspired this new film, Megalopolis. Among them was David Graeber's last book he finished with his collaborator, David Wingrove. But it seems really like he let something cooking for a long time there. And let's see how that goes. Yeah, I think we also are a bit pressed on time here. Let's just very quickly, can you two mention maybe two or three films you're looking forward to the most during the festival? Eliana, how about you?
I think we have a bit of overlap here. I know that earlier I went to see the debut of Andrea Arnold, which was Red Road in 2006, and that's because she'll be getting an honor this year, and also has a film in competition called Bird. And so I'm quite looking forward to this film, even though there was a little master class right after, and it seems that Bird will be a bit different than all of her previous films. However, it'll bring us back to her roots. It'll take place in Kent, which is where the filmmaker is also from. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing that one. Also looking forward to seeing All We Imagine as Light, the
right.
New Payal Kapadia.
Who did A Night of Knowing Nothing.
Yes, who did A Night of Knowing Nothing.
This
what was
essay
this?
Film.
In Was it 3 years ago? Or
two or three
two
years
or three
ago,
years
yeah.
ago.
Played at Kazan, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other title?
Of course, the new Lanthimos. I'll be curious to see that as well. It's in a similar sleeve. It's going perhaps back to, people have said that it's going back to Lanthimos's old style, form, taste, and it's going to be an anthology of 6 parts. And also curious, of course, but perhaps you'll speak about it, The Baker.
And right, but I know that this is the title Jakob is also really looking forward to, right?
Sorry.
The Baker, the Sean Baker?
Ah, okay, Sean Baker. Yeah, yeah, I mean, Nora, it feels like Sean Baker has been one of the most interesting, maybe the most interesting American independent director of contemporary times. And he's so versatile, although his interests are very fixed. He's like very, he has an eye on low-wage labor, predominantly sex work, and you always coined it the term his or from who is the term, the sex worker trilogy?
That's from himself. Yeah.
That's from himself. So Tangerine and The Florida Project and Red Rocket, and now it seems like his newest film Anora, which is about a call girl played by Mikey Madison, seems to be the fourth one, or like another addition, maybe the epilogue to that. And it's 140 minutes long, so it feels like many of his sensibilities.
And his longest film.
Yeah, his longest film. So many of his sensibilities are now getting the more broad, epic treatment.
Right, and I wonder how, you know, wealth will be depicted here, because apparently that's the little we know about the premise of the film, that the protagonist is engaged to, I think, a Russian oligarch, yep, or something. So usually we rather see the opposite end of the economic spectrum. So I'm looking forward to see that, to seeing that. Yeah, any other title?
Yeah, Jakob? I'm excited for Rumors by Guy Madden, right, Evan Johnson, and Galen Johnson, which will be about a G7 meeting, or like G7 members, apparently played by Kate Blanchett, Alicia Vikander, and Charles Dance. I don't know who they will exactly play, but they get lost in the woods or something, and something trippy, something weird will go down. And I mean, it's Guy Madden. Like, he and the Johnson brothers, he made The Forbidden Room, which was like worked with the disfigurement of film material. He made The Green Fog, which was his big homage to Vertigo. So they are a crazy collective. I don't think it's possible to predict what that film is going to be.
Yeah, I just want to quickly add David Cronenberg's The Shrouds. I'm actually not so much of a Cronenbergian, but this one sounds so interesting because this is compelling. This scene seems to be more or less like an autofiction, and he has said that cinema to him is a way to engage with the dead. And his wife passed away 7 years ago or so, and a version of her is allegedly played by Diane Kruger here. And yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I mean, Vincent Cassel plays a version of Cronenberg, looks remarkably close to the director himself. Yeah, yeah, and I think maybe I just throw in here Leos Carax, who has not a short film, not a feature length film. It's something in between, like a mid length film. C'est pas moi, which almost rhymes with you know part of this Me Too thing here in Cannes. Also, that there is this short film by Judith Godrèche, who sort of instigated this reassessment of French Me Too again, and in France, after some interviews at the beginning of the year. And her new film that plays at Un Certain Regard, that played, I think, already at the opening ceremony. It's a short film. It's called Moi Aussi. So Me Too, or So Am I. Yeah, and so yeah, I'm looking forward to the Leos Carax as well. But yeah, I think we should go into the opening film of the festival, just because we don't have so much time anymore, right? Eliana, tell us something about Quentin Dupieux's Le Deuxième Acte.
Okay, Quentin Dupieux's Le Deuxième Acte. Well, where to begin? The synopsis of this film is quite amusing. It's quite bland in some sense, and the film is anything but when comparing it to the synopsis. The film, I feel, it attacks everything that's not politically correct, and it puts it in a type of layered mess that unravels slowly. I think I've seen three of his films, Dali, that we all saw in Venice of last year, and then Yannick came out quite shortly after that, or at the same time.
Before. They played at Locarno.
Okay.
I think it was announced one day before its world premiere in Locarno.
Wow. And there's something for me that his pieces could very easily be theatrical pieces. It's clear that he has a love for the theater, and he puts that in his film. And this film stars some of France's most exported and well-known
household names.
There's your beloved Léa Seydoux. There's
that went to Jacob.
Louis Garrel and Vincent Lindon and Raphael Quenard, who has previously played the title role of Yannick, and there's also another name or two. The waiter.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We do. We don't have to go too deeply into it. No.
But this film, I think, is not everyone's taste. But at the same time, I think what Dupieux does almost brilliantly is that he's able to smell all of the things that people might take issue with and wrap them up, make very strong dialogue and absurd situations, and then make a film that's not too long. I think this film ran between 80 and 90 minutes long, and make a film that appeals in some sense to the mass audience, but also is very much kind of like a cheeky middle finger to art house cinema at the same time, while still being very much a tribute or like an homage to cinema and theater at the same time. I don't know how you find
I think in this regard, to its commercial viability, we should say, right, as a reminder, the opening film of Cannes always has to be released on the same day in France.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense to have something like a crowd pleaser with household names to just attract a lot of people at the same time. Yeah, Jakob, what did you think about this? And I think we don't go too much into what your relationship to Dupieux is, but what did you think of Le Deuxième Acte?
The second act, I have to tie it a bit to my connection to Dupieux. You said it correctly. He's someone who deeply, deeply loves cinema and who does not like so much the way films are seen, I think, nowadays, but of course in a lovable sort of way and in an endearing sort of way. And this film, like many of his films, really revels in his meta layers. So we have a lot of people who are aware that they are in a film, which happens a lot, like especially in his most famous film Rubber, which try to unravel the reasoning behind. There's like the infamous line from that film, or rather famous, which is no reason, that basically every film happens or every plot happens for no reason. If you trace the causality of every plot back to its most logical level, you will find that it basically has to happen because it has to happen. So there's a film. But the reason that film exists is pretty nonsensical when you think about it. But that's how art works. It needs to exist for its own sake. And that's a foundation that art house cinema is, I think, built upon. And he knows that, and he knows what his audience is, therefore, very well. And that's what he addresses here. I don't know, though, if his audience has gotten a bit, let's say, a bit not that deep, or has lost some of its depth or its flexibility in how they reflect cinema, because the punches he pulls here seem rather numb, in my opinion. It's a film that rests on its many layers, but then again, it kind of crashes through nonetheless.
Yeah, I would sort of echo this last aspect especially. But I think we haven't really mentioned what the premise is, and I think in a film that is so simply constructed in that sense, I think we should say it, because that's actually a part I really liked about the film, that I know a few films that are actually able to introduce you to the premise so nonchalantly and so endearingly. Like in the first few minutes, you see the character, the Louis Garrel character, and the, what's his name?
Raphael Quenard.
Yeah. And they have this talk that Louis Garrel wants to get rid of his girlfriend, Léa Seydoux. And Quenard character, he doesn't really understand what's going on here. Why would you do that? If she is so beautiful, what's going on? And yeah, so it's just about that basically. And this is the first half. The other half, like, they are closely approximating the eponymous bar that is called Le Deuxième Acte. That's where the two groups are heading to. So there are these best friends, and then there is the Léa Seydoux character and her father, and she wants to introduce her boyfriend to her father, or her father to her boyfriend. And this is the dynamic, basically. So it's very goofy from the beginning. And what I liked about the beginning was how confident of filmmaking that is. That is really just a long tracking shot following these two people separately, these two groups, and we just have acting. But the fascinating thing I found is that these actors have to use different registers always, and they go from the character they play within the embedded narrative, and then they have to play the actors who play these characters, mm-hmm. and they have to switch in between that ongoingly. And I think that's an impressive feast just from an acting perspective. And however, what you just said, Jakob, I totally agree. It's numb. It's perhaps, like, I wonder, the film to me seems to be trying to deconstruct certain discursive patterns at the moment. And I feel like the film is, I don't know, like 10 years too late for that. I feel like all the things that try to deconstruct, we are all well aware already of. And it rather felt like almost an excuse to seize them again. You know, there's a lot of transphobia, homophobia. There is, what is, maybe a bit of ableism. Yeah. And we have, like, cancel culture. And all this, it's as if, oh, we are putting that quote-unquote here, and now we can actually make fun of how stupid people are who use these things, but we are these people, and isn't it actually fun using these terms? Isn't it funny? And the film almost tries to get this laughter out of us to then point the finger at us, I thought, and that was my experience. And I found it very tiresome. And I, you know, for me, there was an easy bet, you know, this was a perfect festival opener, but I, 80 minutes or not, but I felt very tired. I was 50 minutes in.
I don't really have that much to add to it. I think, yes, I think it actually fits quite into our contemporary landscape. We all know films like The Menu by Mark Mylod or Glass Onion by Rian Johnson, like films that seem to be chronically online and like are film Twitter timelines. Quentin Dupieux is not the youngest person, but like it doesn't really matter how old you are because they always have boomer energy. They are always seem like, I think that's a COVID phenomenon, to be honest. Like it was a time when we were so bombarded with news that they have formed our essence, and now maybe many people need to get it out of their system and just scream into the void that is contemporary cultural discourses. But with the topics he addresses, it's too little too late, I would say. There's something, there's however a new topic, which I won't give away, but it has something to do with the increasing automation of art, which...
Do you think that's too much of a spoiler? I mean, we don't have to, but I don't think that's...
I don't want to give it away, okay, but I'm going to say that there's something still endearing about it, that he says, okay, I use those four actors, I use this one rather secluded location, I use these simple things and I can make art, something that is not automized. And I think that's, in a way, very endearing, as said. But I still yearn for a film that could have done that a bit better.
Yeah, just to tie everything up, finally, I think this film, in my head, I think I can see it becoming like a root of either a cult film somewhere down the road, or a conspiracy theory, and people will try to take apart things here and there. But I do think that what he does get right is he understands very well what it means to be a person, and what it means to be a person perceived by another person, and then a person perceived by another person perceived by another person within their industry, within etc., and all the hypocrisy that follows. And I think for that, I do think it is relevant ultimately, but I'm curious to see what comes out in the next few days, because it's a big question. Like, if you present all these ideas, or if you present all these things, if you're going to say, okay, we have culture, counterculture, and then we have to counterculture or whatever it is, just figuring out how to address being, what are we supposed to do now that we're aware of homophobia, sexism, ageism, ableism? How do we go forward? How do we educate? Where are we supposed to find ourselves? And I do find that a few of these films thus far that we've seen are somewhat talking about this stale movement or energy around what do we do next, or feeling somewhat hopeless in the face of these things, because people feel perhaps that they don't have a voice. What is supposedly funny anymore? What is considered funny anymore? I think it's all curious things to see what emerges from these things, from films like this.
I totally agree with that. I just wonder, did you feel like there was a sincere engagement with that? Did you feel like he challenged our outlook at these?
Not necessarily. No, I don't feel like he challenged our outlook. I think it sort of was more observational and satirical.
Yeah, it's a film that tries to... I think what breaks this film's neck is that it does not make its audience uncomfortable. It's a crowd pleaser.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it kind of has to fail in really challenging our notions.
Rather makes us feel maybe even comfortable, because all the characters are horrible in some sense, but they're also dealing with their own things, and they're somewhat relatable because there's an acceptance. So it's, you know, you make yourself feel good because you realize that we can feel comfortable feeling the things that we feel, or thinking the things that one might think, which I do not agree with ultimately, but to speak to your point, Patrick,
interesting. You know, the word that always the word I had always on my mind was stale. You know, I found it very stale. Mm-hmm. I found it was just as Jakob said, too little, too late. And that's how I felt about it. There were a few things that I think people, especially so-called cinephiles, will like about this. There's this thing with I won't really go into that, but there's this, you know, this side plot that evokes Paul Thomas Anderson. I won't go into that. What that is about, but the film sort of explores this, which is linked to this AI thing that Jakob addressed. That do we need another comedy like that follows similar tropes that we are all used to? There's this discussion between the Léa Seydoux character and the Vincent Lindon character when they said, oh, the world's on fire. Should we really be making movies like this these days? Isn't this all hopeless and stupid? And yeah, there's this idea about reality, if fiction is not the real reality, and how if we cannot get at something that it feels more true. But even that, I think, okay, that's all well intended, but I've heard that so many times before that I felt like it didn't spark anything in me. It didn't make me think. Yeah. Unfortunately, I think we cannot get into the other film we wanted to talk today.
Well, it's not the last episode.
It's true. But we can perhaps, Eliana, we can have that as a cliffhanger, right, for the next episode?
We can.
For today.
We have a cliffhanger.
We do have a cliffhanger, which is.
We'll be discussing the opening film from Kenzenden Cineast, the director's Fortnite, which is Ma Vie, Ma Gueule, or This Is My Life, or That.
Yeah, something like that.
This Is My Life by Sophie Filière.
Yeah.
Who is unfortunately a director who passed away last year, and the film was completed upon her wishes by her children, Agathe and Adam. As always, there's a lot going on the Croisette, and hopefully we'll be able to talk about some more things in future episodes. We have a lot to look forward to. And
we don't really have a schedule here, right? We'll see whenever we can squeeze in a podcast episode, we will record one.
Al improviso, as they say.
And we will also try to get other people here on the podcast as well.
Yes.
But in the meantime, really good to have had you here, Jakob.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. Yes.
And if there are people in our audience who are capable of, listening to German or reading German, where can people find your work on the internet?
On moviebreak.de. I haven't written a review so far, but it's only the second day. There you will find some of my writing endeavors, but also our podcast.
Right.
Yes. Well, thank you both. And until next time.
See you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.